guys, welcome to another episode of Right Owl Politics. For those of you who are new to the show, my name is Ariana. I'm an attorney from Florida and a conservative political columnist. Today, we're talking about the accomplishments in U.S. history. Last week, we talked about the failures or areas of opportunity. So today is the flip side. And we're going to welcome Carlos Fernandez, historian and interior designer and awesome friend to the show to discuss these topics with me. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So part two, huh? Are you ready?
Now the more positive notes.
So just to tell the audience, we're recording this like at a extremely early time in the day. Like it's not even 6 a.m. yet.
Well, yes, but that's because we both, I had a very busy night last night.
So we are using coffee to motivate us through this conversation, right?
Absolutely.
What are you drinking?
I am drinking my mocha frappuccinos that was from Starbucks that are bottled.
Oh, are those any heavy. Good?
Yeah, you know, for this type of thing, full of sugar and caffeine.
That's what okay. I need. It's a
dessert in a bottle.
Fair enough. I'm having some homemade cold brew coffee.
Ah, there you go.
Yes. Very millennial of me. So did you see the video with Biden jamming out to Despacito?
Yes, I saw that, and I was like, oh, and I'm sure you really have that on your phone all the time.
That was, because, like, cringe. Can we talk about that for a little bit?
Sure.
That was the next level of cringe. That is when, like, your lame parent or grandparent is trying to connect with the young people and failing at it.
Well, that reminds me of the way back when with Kerry and Bush running against each other, and I think it was Bush put on a rap song just to show the black vote that, you know, he understood their plight. And I'm just like, those are old means of, you know, those are really old political means that I just think are so pandering. I'd rather you be honest about the fact, and let's be honest, Biden doesn't really have Despacito on his phone. Biden would probably listen to, you know, what normal, you know, white elite liberal people would listen to, which would be
pop,
or it's either going to be pop or it's going to be classical music of some sort, or, you know, or because of his age, it's going to be 60s and 70s music.
But I listen to classical music. Does that make me old?
No, when that makes no. But obviously, there's some educational elitism that goes with classical music, right?
So listening to Bach at work makes me an elitist, huh?
Yes. Oh, come on. It's not terrible. Like I said, I'd rather you be honest about it than just say, oh, well, you know, I'm not really an elitist. I just listen to Bach at work. Yeah. Own it.
It was interesting, though, because the setting of the event where he's playing the song, I mean, you have this Latin singer, Luis Ponce, there, who is the one of the leads in the song Despacito, and he's presenting Biden, and, you know, he announces that Biden is coming out, and there's like an awkward, almost 1 minute delay of Biden coming out. And just like the execution of that whole event, it was cringe center.
Yeah. Well, I think, like I said, it was direct pandering. It is all show, no kind of meat in the conversation as to why you should vote for him if you're Hispanic or if you determine yourself to be Latino, voter to vote for him. It was pretty much, look at me, I have all these amazing Latin musicians that are endorsing me, and that's why you should vote for me. And by the way, I have Despacito on my phone.
Oh, I like that song. And it's actually, for those audience members that don't speak Spanish, it has a good rhythm, but the lyrics themselves, how it's written, is actually very neat. It was done in a very sophisticated way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, Listen, I like Latin music. I'm Latin, so Hispanic music is wonderful. And in general, yeah, I would agree with you. It's a good song. Just the fact that it was used in, for a political purpose to try to capture the young Hispanic voter is just not the way to use it. Using
No, if you vote for somebody just because they share a song with you on your that you have on your phone, what does that say about you?
Well, I think the other issue is that politicians need to stop pandering to racial people by using racial stereotypes
Yeah, so
about their
don't
people.
pander to minorities with stereotypes.
Correct. Or stupid things like that. I don't need to hear a rap song from a politician so that they first so black people can feel that they're more secure in the fact that their person who's in power and listens to the same music they do. Who the hell cares? My viewpoint is that person A doing a better job for you? B providing you opportunities that can actually get you going, that would make you equal to everybody else. That should be the message, not, oh, well, you should vote for me because I understand your cultural understandings of the
Yeah, but it just comes across like fake to
It's
the
very fake.
10th
So
degree.
very fake. That's the one thing you can't, argue about Trump. There's nothing fake about him because he is
Yeah, there's no
that
pretension there. There's no
There's
pretension.
no pretension. There's no pretension. Should we play this Hispanic music during the convention? I don't like Hispanic music.
Cue the Phantom of the Opera. That's what I like.
Exactly. That exactly. He's gonna play what he likes. He doesn't care less what
Or the
the
YMCA.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, by the way, do you like that song?
YMCA. Yeah, I actually saw the Village People live when I went to Park City, Utah, and saw snow for the first time. They actually came over to do a concert there, and I went to see it. It was a lot of fun, a lot of dancing.
Very nice, very nice. But recently, I think Biden has been having a hard time. He's come out of the basement and it's not getting any better. Did you see the Trump ad that's playing where they're showing, the teleprompter reflecting off the surface where Biden is giving an interview?
I did not see that, but I'm glad that they're doing that. I think the other one that was really funny is when Biden said the Harris-Biden administration. And I was like, you're running for president of the United States. How do you get wrong the naming of your administration?
Yeah, that's a head scratcher, right?
Yeah, I know.
All
Well,
right.
but anyways.
So, segue it back to our topic. So, last week we did everything that we consider failure on the American front, or areas of opportunity, if you want to call it that. And now we're going to go to the other side of the spectrum where we talk about American accomplishments. So we'll just do the same thing. You say one, I say one, and we'll go through the list. You start.
No. I started last time. It is now only fair that you start this time.
That's very gentlemanly of you. Ladies first.
Yes.
Okay,
Enjoy
fair
this.
enough. All right. So one of Americans' accomplishment, our Constitution.
Okay, that was on my list. Go ahead.
Definitely one of the most unique and transformative documents in human history. And I think Constitution slash Bill of Rights, correct? So those initial amendments that really protected the citizens from government intervention. And that's what people don't realize. The Constitution is a document of negative liberties. It tells you what the government cannot do to you and what their limitations are. And that was a very unique thought process at the time. And look, we are here as a country, thriving, being prosperous, one of the, if not the world's superpower, one of the world's superpowers. So definitely the founding fathers had that right. So Constitution slash the Bill of Rights, definitely an American accomplishment.
Yeah, and the other thing I have to tell everybody, it's like everyone likes to say that diversity is what makes us great. And diversity does make us great, but our Constitution is probably the most single-handedly the providing document that allows for that diversity. And I'll tell you why. The Constitution is the first contract on in history that a government or a form of government is put to task by putting exactly what government is supposed to do, what it can't do, on a piece of paper. Now, I'm not saying that there weren't other documents that existed like this before, in the sense that there were contracts, but but the Europeans treated governmental contracts like pieces of paper that can be thrown away. Our constitution is so important and so determining, the determining factor of everything we do as far as politics is concerned, that our constitution is the most lasting founding and lawmaking piece of paper that has ever lasted more than almost 300 years. This document is the single most important document in terms of its longevity. There has not been any other state that has had an older constitution than ours.
You know, when I went to see, you know, the actual exhibit in DC, where they have the constitution and all that good stuff, and obviously, we all know that the original constitution, we don't know what happened to them, all the ones that are official copies that they've tracked down. But there's something about looking at that document that is almost transformative, right? As an American citizen, you look at that and go, wow, this is part of my heritage.
Yeah.
And it's very, you know, seeing John Hancock's very prominent signature on there, and it's an experience. And in a time where we're so afraid to talk about what's good about America, this is something that everyone, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, no matter your background, can agree that that document is unique and that we're better for it.
Absolutely. And again, it just brings the idea, and it actually begins the idea for the rest of the world, when, you know, as nation building became became more popular later on, and as well as the decolonization of other states, people look towards a form of constitution for their own countries, their own perspectives, this contract with their own people that should be upheld. And again, that has not been done. If you go to England, you get what is called an implied constitution. And what does that mean? Oh, well, it means a constitution of tradition. It is tradition that we do these things. We don't put it on a piece of paper. We just assume that it's there. This, which, of course, you can already see where the problem begins when you have that kind of a constitution.
You think?
So for the American understanding, I think that also plays to our psyche, that we like to see things written. We like to see things clearly defined for us, so that there are no interpretations in that respect. Obviously, we have a judicial system that interprets the law, but at the end of the day, it is the written word that is upheld, not the implied meaning. So that's why we are, you know, that's why contracts are so long. That's why there's terms and agreements to everything. It's an American experience to understand terms and agreements. I'm sorry to tell everybody, we created that.
Yes. Contract law. There we go.
Contract law. Absolutely. Which comes and stems from the Constitution. The Constitution defines contract law definedly. It's like, you have to write this down. You have to admit what you can and cannot do.
Your turn.
Okay, so in the same breath, because they're so close to each other, Declaration of Independence, whereas the Constitution was Madison's birth child, the Declaration of Independence was birthed by one of my favorite founders, Jefferson, if not my favorite founder.
The Declaration of Independence is kind of America's birth certificate, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's America's birth certificate, but it also sets the foundation for equality. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, comes from this document, not the Constitution. The Constitution is just this we the people preamble kind of thing. And this idea that we want to build a more better perfect union, which is why, I mean, the Constitution was the answer to our separation. The Declaration of Independence is the separation. And we have to understand the Declaration of Independence is the very the founding words of what we want to create. So obviously, arguably, we couldn't have the Constitution without the Declaration of Independence, but the Declaration of Independence is is the spark that begins the fire.
Mm-hmm. Very, very nicely said. let's see, mine. George Washington stepping down after two terms. I think that that is probably one of the most extraordinary steps that anybody could take, because people need to understand George Washington could have been king for life if he wanted to.
And not only that, I think that, so of course, when you're looking at the early republic, you have to also kind of talk about Roman history, because that's where they're getting their history from. That's
their inspiration.
Their inspiration. Mm-hmm. There was a classic story where Julius Caesar, who is the most controversial figure in Roman history, because he brings the republic down and creates the empire. Rome goes from a republic to an empire during his tenure, and the reason why is because he didn't let go of power. He didn't leave after his two terms, and Washington's leaving after two terms signaled to the rest of Americans, this is not an empire. This is not some of we're not trying to build something here that is Rome. We're trying to be the best of Rome, which is the republic.
But imagine, just take a moment. I don't know any politician in modern day that would do this. He is
willingly without contracted.
It follows George Washington's attitude to most things, right? He's an unwilling leader from day one, right? So it's like, please do this, and he's like, I don't really want to do this. I'm old. I'm tired. Please leave me alone. No. You need to do this. You're the best person for the job. I know, but I don't want to do this. Okay, fine. I'll go, but I only do it for this amount of time. It follows that pattern, but that just tells you what kind of man he was. Yeah. Obviously, leaders that are unwilling ones sometimes arguably are the best leaders, because they have the right intentions. They want to do a good job. So I think that set the stage for transition of power, not just here in the United States, but worldwide.
Oh, absolutely. And he's George Washington's an interesting character, because here is the finest of Virginian gentry, right? This is a guy who understands his role. He understands the gravity of his situation, and he does it with very much this kind of caretaking and privilege. He doesn't come from a place of privilege. He came from a place of, I'm doing this as a sacrifice, not that I'm doing this from a place of power.
Right. Let me go back to Mount Vernon, sort of thing.
I need to go back to my plantation. I'm happy in my plantation, and I want to stay in my plantation.
Right.
So that's the other thing that people don't understand. The presidency and working in state office was considered a sacrifice for the good of the country, not for a paycheck or power. That was the idea. And that's actually one of the reasons why I'll be voting for Trump again in the next election, because of the fact that Trump to this day has never accepted a salary from the White House. And his viewpoint, and he continued that tradition, that this working and serving as a public servant is a sacrifice for the American good, not for me to gain money or power.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Your turn.
So the Louisiana Purchase.
You and your Jefferson history, man.
Well, I'm going chronologically, but yes, I do love Jefferson. So Louisiana Purchase is the beginning. I mean, for me, this is the very beginning of American expansion to the rest of our wonderful country. We begin, arguably, the birth of Manifest Destiny is birthed by the Louisiana Purchase. We are going to build a nation from sea to shining sea, and this begins it.
I can't overstate how important that was. It was a huge land buy for basically pennies on the dollar. So it was probably one of the best business deals that America has ever made.
Yeah. And thank God the French needed money.
Yes. Well, the French always need money.
But yeah, no, I think that you also have to think of it in these terms. Here is a nation of 13 states. This now opens up the idea that the Union will only continue to grow. It is a Manifest Destiny, which later comes, is this idea that we, you know, imperialism, American imperialism did exist, and it was part of our understanding that we do need to, you know, get more land. And tell everybody how amazing we are, and we want to show and we want to get more land so we can become more amazing. So I think the other idea is that we wouldn't have the states that we have now without it. We wouldn't have Manifest Destiny didn't exist, which by the way, I'm saying two things that are on my list at the same time, so I apologize, but if without those, we wouldn't have the 50 states that we have today.
Just so that people are clear, Manifest Destiny is actually kind of a controversial concept in American history.
Arguably good or bad.
Right. It's usually Manifest Destiny at the time. She's usually represented as a woman who's traveling west. It's this concept that we are predestined to have this very large territory, and that is our godly destiny, and that we must meet it, and we must do anything possible to make sure that we are the superpower, and that is our destiny, and we need to fill the shoes of that destiny. So some people really embrace it because they argue that American supremacy comes from that. Others say that a lot of blood and treasure was in the balance, and that the U.S. did a lot of questionable actions because of it. But just to let you guys know, it's a controversial topic in American history.
It is. And it goes with a lot of things, and it has a lot of connotations and meanings. Obviously, Native Americans would probably kill me by having said that. And at the same time, also, with that comes all the American issues of the day that also transplanted to those Western states like slavery. So, yeah, there's a lot of arguably bad things that occurred during then. But again, at the end of the day, you wouldn't have 50 states without it.
I agree. So my turn. So I'm going to say this and you're going to laugh hysterically. Okay. Establishing a designated day to give thanks / Thanksgiving. I'm biased. This is my favorite holiday. And let me get on my soapbox and explain why this is my favorite holiday. Unlike Christmas, which by the way, Christmas is great. I love Christmas. I love presents. We understand each other. But Thanksgiving is more about family and appreciating what you do have. And I think there's something about the American character, as cocky as we are. We've designated a day where we contemplate, and it's an introspection moment, right? And think about what we do have and what should we be thankful for. And designating a day to do that, I think that's extraordinary. I mean, for a country that's always accused of being cocky and overconfident and just into themselves, the fact that we do have a day where we stop and reflect, I think that's extraordinary. And other countries have followed suit, recognizing a similar day. So yes, it's because it's my favorite holiday. And two, yes, I love the food. But most importantly, it's a day for us to concentrate on the important things in life.
So I'll give the more historical approach as to why I like that topic. Thanksgiving is a phenomenal day, not only because of the fact that of what you just, all of the things that you mentioned, but at the same time, imagine this. It is a day in which all Americans are doing something very similar. And without a religious connotation and with a kind of sense of pride with back to the state, right? You're not doing Thanksgiving because Jesus died or was born or had some, you know, had a cousin that was or did anything. It was pretty much, this is a day where we are not going to have religious connotations, that we're just going to set, you know, we expect everyone to be with their families and say thanks or be thankful because they have such the opportunity to have such a meal with family at that given moment in time. Thanksgiving was instituted by FDR. Thanksgiving was also kind of this idea that during the Great Depression, that this was a lasting, hopeful thing. It was a required thing that you need to have family around you. Doesn't matter if you're going through good times or bad times. And at that time, it was really, really bad. But you had to have a day once a year where you needed just to be around the family and contemplate over the state. As opposed to the religious embodiments of the rest of the holidays.
Yes, I agree. That's a nice way of summing it up. Your turn.
All right. So I put the word suffrage here because I'm going chronologically. I put suffrage because Jackson is the first person to give universal male suffrage, which also I have to give a nice little historical tidbit to everybody. not everyone could vote when we first started our little experiment of the American.
Yeah, only like white landowners.
Exactly. And actually, it didn't even say white. It just said landowners only. And
which so by default was white and male.
Yes, by in the large, yes, about 99.9% of them were. But there were some, you know, mixed races that did loan, that did own land that could vote.
What, like 1%?
0.1%. But yes, I understand your point. But the idea, but they still uphold their contract. The contract is you just had to own land. The idea then comes Jackson, which, by the way, this is why the white partial. Okay, so the White House was only burned twice in history. It was burned down because of the Brits during the War of 1812 that we spoke about in the past one. And the other reason why it was partially burned was because Jackson would literally have parties of the common person in the White House all the time. And here's a bunch of drunken regulars drinking too much, and there's part of them burned part of the White House down. And the reason for that is because Jackson comes in and says, I want all white males to be able to vote. And arguably controversial, right? He didn't say all males. He didn't say all people. He said all white men. But what I wanted to be very clear is that there is a progression. It is the beginning. It is the, you know, you can't deny that his administration provided more people access to democracy. And then from Jackson, you go all the way to Wilson, because that's when we get all women's right to vote. You also have the
women.
Yeah, exactly. Then you also have the Civil Rights Act, and you also have the 13th Amendment that ends slavery, and that provides also more suffrage. So the idea is that it's a heritage. We got there. Yes, we didn't give everyone the right to vote. Yes, it was very racially tied. Once Jackson made it available to more people, and yes, we didn't give women the right to vote until almost to almost about 50 years after Jackson's universal, and we didn't give the black vote a serious opening until the Civil Rights Act 50 years later. So it did take us a little bit to get there, but again, can never say that any of these issues and all of these were good things because they all showed progression that we got where we are today.
Oh, I agree with you. And on the subject of votes for women, you know, Mary Poppins, usually people are familiar with that film, one of the Disney musicals. There's a scene where the mother of the children that Mary Poppins is taking care of, she's pushing for women's votes in England, and there's a whole number there, and one of the most memorable lines, it's like, we're pretty soldiers in petticoats. I think every group had their own struggle to get there, but definitely Jackson's did to every male, white male, was the first step in the right direction.
Exactly. And not only that, there are so many, you know, there were so many problems in other nations. Other nations didn't understand democracy. They had either a former republic, a constitutional monarchy, or they had some form of a limited democratic means of representational government. They were also facing their own trials and tribulations. I mean, female suffrage, as far as I'm concerned, was in our country was much, much less an issue than it was for the Brits. The Brits were having a major issue with it. They were imprisoning women more. We didn't imprison a lot of our suffragettes. It's not like all the politicians were in love with them either. But the suffragettes were never a problem, were never violent here, never got to that point here.
The suffragettes in England were at some point, they were acting as domestic terrorists in some respects. Yeah. So it got bad in England. The U.S. version of that was a lot more contained, was a lot more cerebral, the arguments. Yeah. And I think that it was a much easier path for those women here in the United States. In England, it really became more of a patriarchal society trying to keep the women in place. And we get it, it's an older society, so there's something that has something to do with it. But yeah, there's a difference definitely in approach and results.
Yeah.
My turn. So the U.S. saving Europe and the rest of the world from Nazis.
I also have this on my list.
Because we cannot underestimate how important that is. I mean, obviously, Nazis, evil, cold-hearted, had the wrong values in every sense of the word. The fact that the U.S. was able to come in and help and really push them into submission was probably one of the most extraordinary steps taken in the 20th century. And from that freedom, Europe was able to prosper for decades, and the United States was there like a guardian protecting them from any potential hardship. But that actual event of saving the world from Nazis, what an extraordinary American accomplishment. That is where the American mythology of being these fearless and determined individual really stems from, because of our bravery during World War II. So thank you to that greatest generation for setting the example for generations to come.
World War II is probably the most defining war, defining, and what we, and you know, the funny thing is not just the war, it's what we did after the war that defined us and created the rest of the narrative for the 20th century. In our American understanding of the world, because you have, we did not only just save the Nazis from Europe and the world, we also rebuilt Europe. The Marshall Plan was probably single-handedly the largest building plan in a foreign continent ever proposed by any other neighboring country in the world. I mean, here's a plan where we just come over and fix things for another country, because they're, you know, there's an affinity between America and Europe that shouldn't be understated. We are their grandchildren
in a lot of ways.
And
we behave like their grandchildren sometimes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Sometimes we have to yell at them and make them pay for things that they should be paying for. But anyways, regardless of that fact, you have to also consider a few things, right? So World War II is as far as the Nazis, people don't realize it wasn't an immediate like victory. It, not only was it not an immediate victory, it was also not a for sure thing that we were going to win this. It was a stalemate for most of the war. The Nazis and the German people are very good at war. You can learn from their history. They're very good at war. And it was it took a lot of, as Churchill said, blood, toil, tears, and sweat.
Also, victory. some interesting bedfellows. I mean, the U.S. and Great Britain with Soviet Russia.
So. Oh yeah, Uncle Joe.
Yeah. Joseph Stalin. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you want to say Joe Biden too, that's okay with me.
Ouch.
Anyways.
All right. Yeah. Your turn.
My turn. I also, and again, doing this chronologically, the National Park Service.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So Teddy Roosevelt, arguably another favorite president of mine. And you know, the funny part is that he did this for selfish reasons in the beginning.
Don't we all?
Which is, I love going hunting and I don't want to see cities where there should be places to hunt. So he built the National Park Service to preserve America's most treasured lands and unique lands in the country that provided opportunities for people to do recreational activities, including hunting. Without it, we wouldn't have the kind of parks that we have today. Actually, our park system is considered the golden standard in the world.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. My next one, landing on the moon in 1969. So for me, that was such a major American accomplishment. Obviously, we were in a race with the Soviets to see who could be the first one to put a man in space. We failed at the man in space because, you know, kind of the Russians may have had a lead on that, but we landed on the moon. We were the first country to put a man on the moon in 1969. And as the saying goes, that was a small step for man, giant leap for mankind. And I think that's an extraordinary moment in American history. There's some people out there that still question the moon landing. We're not going to pay attention to those people. That was a very extraordinary moment in American history, and it inspired generations to look into the heavens and dream big.
I mean, It is an amazing accomplishment. It literally was the defining moment of the defining moment of American ingenuity. Anytime you look at that clip where that happens, you immediately think of JFK and his speech saying, "We do these things not because they are easy. We do these things because they are hard." Mm-hmm. It is the very fact that we don't take no for an answer. it is that kind of level of you know, we do these, we want to be there, we want to do great things, we are going to do great things, and we will continue to do great things. So I think it's a great segue to the idea that America is unique, America is great, and America will continue to strive for success in all realms that it can find it.
All right, your turn.
So my next one is going to leeway into my personal things, like, for example, the gay marriage decision by the Supreme Court, which is one of the most landmarking as I can get married.
So you can have that house with the white picket fence.
Now. Exactly. Or the divorce and the divorce attorney fees, like you're like.
You get to share it in
the misery. With that experience. Listen, I'm not the one who has this crazy client who's getting divorced. You are.
This is true. All right. That was a landmark decision, right? So very, very important, very, very inspiring moment, I think, for inclusivity and equality everywhere.
And you have to also keep in mind, conservative majority court got this through.
Yeah, so it was a big thing.
Yeah, and I think it just lays the idea that most people don't realize the gravity of that. I think that everyone who thinks that the court is polarized and completely politicized, I'm shown again and again surprised by the court to say that they're not that politicized. They're going through the throes of it just like we are, and they are caretakers, and they, as far as our constitution is concerned, and they respect the constitution, and they want to make sure that everyone is given the opportunity of that other regular Americans are given. So that was a very wonderful thing to hear when that was actually decided upon, and it was good to see who voted for it.
It was nice acknowledgement of the right, because arguably you guys have always had the right. It was just being denied to you. So I was very happy.
Had a law. Yeah, we had a law denying it. Right. So that decision destroyed that law. So that was great. And, you know, again, it's the Supreme, and of course, you can even go and jump and carry this on to other Supreme Court decisions, when it comes to black votes and black issues and the end of segregation. So I'm not denying that. I'm just saying, for personal and selfish reasons, I'm using this Supreme Court decision first.
So let's see, my next one. So I'm going to, I have four items that I'm going to basically present together, because they're all inventions that I think change the world.
So sure.
The light bulb.
Okay.
The airplane.
Mm-hmm.
The telephone.
Yep.
And the internet. So yep.
American invention.
Yes. So all of those are American mic drops, literally. Like, the light bulb changed the way how we live. The airplane changed the way how we travel. The telephone changed the way how we communicate. And then again, the internet changed the way how we consume media, how we work, how we play. It was just extraordinary. And all of that is thanks to American ingenuity and American initiative taking.
Yeah, we also created the computer.
Yeah, just that minor thing.
Yeah, just that minor thing, that, you know, the thing that I'm on right now.
Yes.
So I mean, absolutely. Actually, this entire conversation reminds me of that ride in Epcot Disney where you're in the golf ball.
Oh yeah. Spaceship Earth.
But yes, you're absolutely right, Eric. And, you know, the funny thing is, when you're going through that ride and you're seeing all the strides in Europe and everything, but then when you get to the technology part, it's all done by Americans. And this disco woman is actually programming a computer.
Yes. with her awesome boots, her 1970s.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I you know, those are the types of things that you just have to smile with, because you know, it wasn't made in Europe, it wasn't made in China, it wasn't made anywhere else, it was made right here in the United States. We created these unique situations, albeit there was some rivalries when they were being made. I mean,
but that Nicola, happens with every invention.
That's true. All right, is it my turn?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to say at this point, I'm going to bring up, let's see, World War One, because although World War Two was incredibly important and a major success, World War One equally was incredibly important and a major success. And the reason why is because, again, before Nazi Germany, there was Germany. And Germany was running a little bit without any, it wanted to flex its muscles, and it wanted to show the world that it can conquer, that it can conquer things. And including in that was France and England. And to have the United States just jump into that war, and mind you, we didn't want to go into that war anyway. Woodrow Wilson was not exactly a war hawk. He did not want to join the fight. He actually, after the war, said, we need to figure out how we can mediate this with a League of Nations that failed during World War II. But the idea is that World War I sets the stage. It sets also our stage in involvement in Europe. We don't want to, you know, we want to be far away, but close enough where we can say something when things go awry.
I think that's a good point. And I think World War I, there was a lot of lessons that unfortunately not everybody learned. But I think the success of World War One is that we understand that it's an issue, right?
Exactly.
So I agree with you on that. So yeah. It's a good point to make, and especially we always talk about World War Two, but we always forget about World War One, because World War One was the war to end all wars, and then
The World War One was the war to start all wars.
right.
Well, the other thing is that you have to take also into consideration that World War One defines the world landscape, right? So the other thing is that people don't understand is that World War One, you have still ancient, old kingdoms still in place, like the Ottoman Empire. The Middle East, the modern Middle East, is birthed after World War One. The modern city-states within the Eastern Bloc is created after World War One. And it's because of those separations of states by ethnic or religious means that divides people even further and made them more and contrary to each other, which then sparks another war, right? Or if you're just Britain and France, you're just giving land to people who have money.
because they always need money.
Exactly. You get land. And that's how we have Iraq, which has no real cultural or religious unity. Because of that, right? Because
the lack of cohesion in all these Middle Eastern countries is probably the reason why the history in the Middle East is what it is.
Exactly. So, but again, we would have no idea what these countries would look like. We would have no ideas what the issues would be without World War One. World War One gets rid of all of the kingdoms. The kingdoms are now forgone. Most of these will now be ruled by some sort of democracy.
Right. Well, Carlos, thanks for coming on the show. It's always great to have you.
Absolutely. I'm always happy to come on. And even if it's at 6 in the morning, I'm happy to wake up this early. It was my fault that we're doing it this way. I'm awake. I was at it. And thank you for having me. And thank you for doing this so early.
Well, we appreciate your devotion to the show. And we'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Excellent. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to today's program. And I think the biggest takeaway from the show is celebrate our American history when it's appropriate. Don't be afraid to embrace the good stuff. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. No country is perfect, but the United States has definitely made the world a better place. And understanding that and embracing it is part of the American journey. doesn't mean we don't have room for improvement. It just means we need to acknowledge the good and move forward so we can improve the areas of opportunity. So it was a pleasure to have Carlos on the show. Always great conversation with him. Remember, we're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, so look us up there. And our podcast episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you hear your podcasts. Remember, we're not your dad's political news show. We're a little bit different, a little bit more sarcastic, a little bit more millennial. So spread the word, tell your friends, and tune in. Always interesting conversations and definitely entertaining ones. So thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next week.